The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
All right, a real treat for us here this Thursday on Off the Ball. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the Open champion, Shane Lowry. How are you keeping, Shane?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I can't. I'm as good as I can be. I'm isolated here in Florida and doing as much as I can to pass the time. But so far it's gone okay, but I'm not sure how much longer I'll be able to put up with this, you know.
You're joining us with thanks to Bank of Ireland, who are there to support their customers throughout the impact of coronavirus. And you can check out bankofireland.com for more information. Generally, when you ask Irish people how they are, they say, I'm grand. Now yeah. It's, I'm grand. Well, you know, as well as can be.
Yeah. It's very strange times in the whole world, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's funny because it affects the whole world. And I think that's what's the strange thing about it. And yeah, I suppose everyone just kind of needs to batten down the hatches and get through it as best they can.
So you're still in Florida?
I am, yeah. We're here. We were here now for, well, we'll see. I don't know how long we're here for. We're definitely here for another few weeks and we'll just wait and see. But, you know, our decision was to stay on. I was able to still practice. The golf course was still open, but they closed a couple of weeks ago. It's over 2 weeks since they closed, so happened to shot in 2 weeks, and you know, I'm starting to miss the game. And it's funny that, not that I always miss competing. Like when I'm not playing, I miss that edge. But I even miss just getting out and playing nine holes. It's funny when it's taken away from you. You don't realize.
But it's your life. It's your routine.
How much you actually enjoy it, you know.
Because you were over there for a spell, there were some big tournaments, and golf was one of the last sports to be pulled. The Players' Championship went ahead, the first round went ahead, and I know some of the players, I saw Bernd Wiesberger quoted that he was in this mad rush, got the final flight back to Austria. Were you tempted to come home, or at the time did you not realise that maybe this would be a extended stay in Florida?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, yeah, we didn't really know what to do. So we've a house rented here in Florida, and we decided to just come back and stay here. We've got a decent setup, you know. I didn't think it was going to get as bad as it did, so you know, I didn't think it was going to be basically full lockdown. But you know, it's whether we're here or whether in Florida, it's just the same thing anyway. Whether we're here or in Ireland, because you know, it's just myself, Wendy, and Iris in the house, and you know, we've got a decent setup. I managed to go out, and the first day I got back after the Players, I went down to one of the sports shops and I bought some gym equipment. I have a little gym in the garage, and myself and Wendy can use that, and we can go for a walk around, you know, the area here. And it's fine. Like, it's not, you know, it is what it is. It'd be the same if we were in Ireland. So, you know, we're here for the foreseeable future, but I'd say probably in the next month or two, I'd say we might come home. We might try and come home if we can.
I think you touched on it there, that this is a worldwide outbreak, and it's been a real, probably, leveler that nobody's immune to this. So everyone in the field has gone through a similar range of emotions, from probably the initial shock of a lockdown to the anxiety and the stress and the worry of your own health and your health of your family and parents and grandparents. And then probably over the last couple of weeks, maybe a sense that this is a new normal. Has that been a similar case for you? Like, how's your head been for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's funny. I've had like ups and downs. You know, at the start, I found it really hard to get my head around the whole thing. You know, and I was a little bit, didn't know what to make of it. And then went through a period where I was like, right, you know, I have my home gym. I'm going to focus on doing some stuff every day. And then I went through a period sort of last week where I'm like, you know, a bit down and a bit like, when is this ever going to end? So it's kind of, but the one thing that does get me up and moving is like going out for a walk or going out for a little run or, you know, going into the gym and just doing some stuff. And just, I think the big thing, and you do see a lot of social media, a lot of online stuff about people staying active and trying to stay healthy. And I think that's the big thing. If you stay a little bit active and get out for your little walk or your little run or, you know, do something every day, I think that mentally is going to put you in a better place than if you just sit around and think, you know, start thinking about the world and why this is happening and, you know, how disappointing it is. And I think try and pick some positives from the whole thing.
Are you generally a worrier, or has this sort of caught you off
no,
guard?
No, I'd be very much a go with the flow, kind of, you know, take each day as it comes. And I think, you know, I've seen a quote from Paul Kimmage about, it's like the Tour de France. You can't think of Paris. You know, you have to just take it day by day. So I think that's kind of the way you look at it. Like, you literally just have to take it day by day, get up and just be the best version of yourself you can be that day. Like, I can't go out and practice. You know, I can't do what I do, but I can do certain things that will help me in my career, or, you know, my head, I suppose.
Yeah, what can you do? Because if you are looking for the positives, and like, this is a break, an unexpected break, maybe a time to collect some thoughts, and particularly with the year you've had, reflect. Maybe you'd already thought you'd had that period of this year, and you were going to be into the real hard slog over the next few months. Have you been in touch a lot with Neil Manship about how you come out of this in a good place?
Yeah, I speak to Neil every few days, but I, as regards myself, like I think I was most disappointed at the start of the whole thing, you know, after the players, because I really felt like I was starting to play some decent golf, and I felt like I was coming into some tournaments that suited my game. Obviously, the Masters, that's supposed to be this week, where I was looking forward to that, and you know, I had a very exciting summer ahead of me. I was going to get to play the Irish Open in Mount Juliet, you know, as the Open champion. I was going to get to go and defend the Open. So that's where I kind of struggled, but it was all selfish things. It was all like, you know, I don't get to do this, so it's very disappointing for me. But, you know, like, I've never had a break like this. I've never had a period of time where I'm not looking towards the next tournament, as in, like, I don't know when we're going to be back playing, so I don't have a date. So it's difficult to kind of set goals, but I try and set some, like, weekly goals and daily goals, and, you know, hit them. And look, I talk about the gym and doing some exercise, and I have that, but like, I'm not the person that, you know, I'm not looking to, like, lose loads of weight coming out of this. I'm not looking to change my body shape or, you know, anything like that. I'm just looking to I am looking to get a little bit fitter, a little bit stronger through the whole thing. And, you know, we'll see what happens then when it all finishes.
These Peloton bikes seem to be the new phenomenon. I see Rory McIlroy is a world leading, his competitive edge. He seems to be up against Justin Thomas. I don't know a huge amount about it, but are you getting involved in this?
I have a Peloton bike, but I won't give anyone my username. So I ordered one online and it came there a few weeks ago. It's great. It's like an online spin bike. And,
right.
You know, I get on it for like 45 minutes most days and do as much as I can and do as hard as I can. But I'm like I see Rory and a friend of mine here, Stephen Grant, is living over here as well. And he's got one and he's a bit of a beast on it. Like, he's finishing the top 50 out of 50,000 people. Whereas I'm happy if, like, I'm kind of looking to, if I finish in the top 10 or 15% of the people doing it, I'm pretty happy. So, yeah, look, it's something to keep me occupied and something to do every day. And, you know, it passes an extra hour in the day, I suppose. Mm.
It's interesting you mentioned the Masters, and this should be Masters weekend. Look, there's context. There's almost too much bloody context to everything at the moment. And understandably, sport takes a little bit of a back seat. But have you had to think about how you deal with those disappointments? Because, like, the benefits of winning an Open Championship, there's obviously the monetary benefits and all of that, but the nice stuff that comes with it. And
yeah,
you would have been at the Masters this week, front and center, Open Champion. Yeah. You would have had a marquee group, I'm sure. You would have been one of the big draws and the big attractions. It'll still happen eventually, but sort of getting your head around that. And, like, while you can have all the context in the world, allowing yourself to be disappointed?
Yeah, like, you sit there and you think, like, you know, you're sort of thinking, this is really disappointing. Like, and it's all very selfish things. Like, you know, you've been selfish thinking to yourself. Like, I wouldn't go saying them or, you know, speaking about them normally. Mm. But, yeah, like, I was going to be going to the Masters as the most recent major champion. I was probably going to have a nice draw. You know, I was really looking forward to it. But, you know, these things can't happen. And it's funny you talk about sport. Like, generally in times of, like, crisis in the world, like, even during, you know, the recession in 07, 08, 09, like, you know, all people had was sport. You know, most people have sport, like, and sport kind of gets people through everything. Like, I remember you know, in 2009, say, when people were going through really tough times. Like, I was lucky, I won the Irish Open in May, but, like, Ireland just won the Grand Slam, Leinster won the Heineken Cup, and, you know, I won the Irish Open, and I just felt like sport was kind of booming, and it was kind of, you know, gets people through the tough times, and obviously you don't have it now, which is, you know, quite, you know, it's weird, isn't it? It's just weird not to have sport, and, like, you know, to not have the Masters in April this year is just, I find it just weird, like, you know, and even I woke up this morning and I was flicking through Instagram and I'm looking, going, wow, I should be out playing Augusta now. Like, that's kind of, it's a bit disappointing. But look, it is what it is. And I think we just have to get through this as well as we can. And when it's all over, I think we'll all be better people for it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Are you a bit of a news junkie at this time? Like, are you following absolutely everything, or is it just too grim?
So it's funny, right? The way it is here in America, obviously, social media, online news, I see what's going on. But in Ireland, like, if you sit at home and watch the 6-1 news, it's about Ireland. Like, it's kind of the whole country, this is what's happening. Whereas, like, you know, in America, it's like CNN are telling you one thing because they're anti-Trump. Fox are telling you one thing because they're pro-Trump. And then you have, like, the local, your state, like the Florida State news channels, they're telling you another thing. So it's kind of like, it's a weird setup here in America where it's very politically based. Like, they're all trying to outdo each other, and they're all trying to, you know, CNN are trying to make Trump look bad, Fox are trying to make him look good, and, you know, they're not, I don't think they're giving, you know, the right type of news or whatever. So it's just weird looking at it on TV, but obviously I keep it up to date with, you know, RT News and what's happening back in Ireland. And look, Ireland have seemed to have done are doing, you know, fingers crossed, they're still doing a decent job at the whole thing, and, you know, hopefully start to flatten that curve soon.
Yeah, you were part of that video as well that your manager Conor Ridge put together, encouraging people to flatten the curve and supporting the frontline workers. And, like, your wife Wendy was a nurse. I'm sure many of her friends are very much there on the front line. I'm sure you're hearing all the stories that are coming back.
Yeah, like, she's got a few, obviously she's still in touch with a few friends that she used to work with, and the stories are horrendous. Like, some of them are saying, it's, you know, some of them that have worked on, you know, in nursing for over 20 years is saying it's like they've never seen it before, you know. It's incredible, you know, the stuff that those people do. I've always said it because I've known, like, the hours that Wendy used to put in when we were going out before she stopped working was, like, you know, I always said nurses and doctors don't get paid enough. And, you know, to see what they have to go through, they put basically put their lives on the line every day to go in there and, you know, try and help people. So it's, you know, it's tough times for them, tough times for everyone. But like I said, hopefully we all pull through this, and hopefully there's, you know, as little amount of casualties as possible. And you know, when it's all over, hopefully it'll be a distant memory.
And what's the situation then where you are in Florida? Because obviously in America, it seems they were that little bit slower, well, maybe considerably slower to react in certain parts of the world, and that they weren't taking it quite as seriously. And you see what they're talking about this week, basically facing into their Pearl Harbor moment with the amount of deaths that are to come.
Yeah.
Like, have you looked from where you are in Florida? Is it on total lockdown, and do you feel quite safe?
Yeah, we feel very safe here. Like, we're, you know, we live in a gated community. So we're, you see people, not many people anymore out for walks, quite an older population down here as well. So I'd say they're all been very careful. You know, we don't go to the supermarket anymore. We get our food delivered, stuff like that. But it's funny where we are in Florida, you know, there's not that many cases or there's not that many deaths, but what has happened in the last couple of weeks is a lot of people from New York have houses down here in Florida. So when everything got shut down in New York, they all just moved down here. So they started to bring the virus down here. And that's how it transmitted down to Florida, because there wasn't that many cases down here. And people were saying that, you know, any weather over 80 degrees that was struggling to survive in the virus itself. So, but we're just being as safe as we can. Like, we're literally not in contact with anyone, and, you know, been as safe as we can, and, you know, wait it all out, I suppose.
Yeah, I was thinking watching you on Instagram and that over the few weeks that obviously at times, you know, you're such a home bird, but you probably pointed it out earlier that even if you were at home in Dublin, you'd still be stuck in your house. You wouldn't be able to see your parents. You wouldn't be able to see the family anyways. But I presume we're on Zoom today like the rest of the world. Is that how the Lowry family are keeping in touch? Everyone's good back in Clara?
Yeah. FaceTime and Zoom or whatever, and just keeping in touch through WhatsApp. It's, you know, just trying to... I think my dad's probably more disappointed than anyone this week. My uncle Colm, my mum's brother, was supposed to come to the Masters with me this week. And one of my best friend, Tom, he hasn't been. He's a school teacher, and this was the first year that the Masters fell on Easter. So he was supposed to be in Augusta this week for me. So it's kind of, it's you know, keeping in touch with everyone through FaceTime or Zoom or whatever. And it's kind of just trying to check in and see how everyone are. People are able to look after themselves. Just make sure people are doing the right things, that they're not being careless with how they're going about their daily business, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be done. I saw you were playing a bit of darts last night. I was interested in this because when all of this was kicking off, we were sitting down in the off the ball offices trying to come up with some plans for what we could do. And I had this genius idea, I thought, of darts on Zoom, and we get, say, Brian O'Driscoll against Ronan O'Gara. They'd set up two cameras. There's no way of cheating, and people would really buy into this. And I was pretty much laughed out of the place. And then I see yourself and Ian Poulter are going at it, and it's going to be this massive success. Did it happen?
Well, yeah. I got a dartboard about 3 weeks ago, and I put it up, and I said I was going to start to play because I used to play a lot when I was younger. We had a dartboard in the house. Myself and my brother used to play. So I started playing, and Poulter seen online that I had one. He said, "Here, we should get a game on Instagram." And I was like, "Right, I need a few days to practice," because I thought he was going to be really good. We played a game on Instagram live last night. It was probably a bit late for people back home. We played at 8 o'clock here. See, I can't. It's in the living room, so I can't play before 7 o'clock. So because Iris will be running around, but. Yeah, it was a bit of a laugh past a half an hour for me.
Who won?
I won 2-1.
Good man.
But now, bear in mind, I think somebody put up our averages afterwards. I think his average was about 38, and my average is about 41. So we're not world beaters. Like.
And did I not see you challenging Michael Van Gerwen to a match later in the year?
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Come on.
I've got his outboard.
All right.
The outline of the dartboard, and he's seen it and he tweeted, and yeah, so I never know, might get a game against him. It'll be a short game because he'll win.
What was yesterday like then? Because the news came through that the Open Championship had been cancelled for the year, pushed back completely. It's not going to go till the autumn in any revised schedule. It's not going to be played behind closed doors. It's going to be Royal St. George 2021. Was this news you were expecting?
Honestly, I wasn't expecting it at all. I woke up yesterday morning and I had a text from Brian and Connor saying that the RNA have just got on to us. They're going to announce it this afternoon that you're going to have to do some stuff and do some videos or, you know, chat to a few people. So, it's weird. It's strange that there's going to be no Open this year. And, you know, obviously, when it came out, everyone's going on, oh, you're going to be the Open champion for 2 years. You know, that's great, blah, 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 blah. Personally, I'm very disappointed because, you know, I would have liked to go back to St. George's this year and defend it. It would have been nice. Maybe this is just me being a bit negative, but I don't think it's going to be the same going back in 2021. After winning it 2 years ago, I know I'm going to be the defending champion, but it's going to be a bit different. But yeah, it is what it is. Look, I think the RNA made the call based on the health and safety of everyone. And I think, you know, they weren't sure that they were going to be able to stage a tournament, whether it be in July, August, September. You know, the latest they probably could have went was late September. So they probably weren't sure that they were going to be able to, you know, hold a tournament even if it went to that date. So they decided to, you know, to call it. So I think, you know, it was probably the right decision, but obviously it's a bit disappointing.
Yeah, sure. And I guess the alternative was if they did play it in late September, that it's behind closed doors potentially. That is all the talk and all the rumour that we may be without crowds at sporting events for the rest of this year. If it was a choice between behind closed doors and no fans, and actually waiting the year? Is this what you would have gone with?
Yeah, I think it'd be weird playing a major, especially with no fans. Like, look, we play plenty of tournaments where there's not that many people there, but to play like an Open where there's normally 200,000 people there for the week, to play with nothing would be a bit weird. So, there is talk of that probably when the PGA Tour and the European Tour do come back, that's going to be behind closed doors. But it's, we just have to wait and see. The thing is, like, people think it's only the players and caddies that turn up to put on an event. But, like, you know, I was texting some friends yesterday and I was saying, to put on an event probably takes more than 1,000 people to be on the grounds at any time. So it's not just, it's not a very small amount of people. So it's still tricky, it's very tricky.
Yeah, that's 1,000 people that all have family and friends and exactly, elderly relatives as well that they go home to within the next couple of weeks. The PGA Tour obviously as well yesterday then came out with a sort of revised schedule of potentially getting back playing regular events by the middle of June, the PGA Championship in San Francisco, which I know has been particularly hard hit in August, a US Open in September, a Masters in November. Like, do you need to start preparing yourself mentally for golf back in the middle of June, or do you just feel it's way too early to start thinking about that?
I think personally it's probably a little bit ambitious, but we just have to wait and see. The thing is with golf, and I've said it all along, my thing that I struggle to get my head around is when, let's say when Ireland gets everything back and we're able to get sport back. When Ireland gets everything under control and sport is able to come back, like all the GA players live in Ireland, so they're all going to be able to go train, go and play. Same with like the Premiership in the UK when that comes back. You know, they all live in the UK and they're going to be able to play. So, but with golfers, like, the PGA Championship, say, in August in San Francisco, there's, I don't know, many different countries are going to be represented, but they all don't live in America. If we all lived in America, I think it'd probably be a little bit easier, but there's going to be guys coming from all over the world, and I think there might still be travel restrictions in place from certain countries to other countries, and having to quarantine for 2 weeks, you have to fly in 2 weeks early and quarantine yourself for 2 weeks just to play one tournament. Like, I don't know how it's going to work, to be honest.
Yeah, it is difficult to see. It's going to be fascinating, considering as well, like, money talks in these scenarios, and the PGA Tour have just signed a new $1 billion deal with NBC, who obviously want live golf. There's only so many Tiger Woods against Phil Mickelson matches. I think that'll whet people's appetites. And as you say, there's going to be enough asterisks probably around all these major championships. Never mind if you have a situation where there's just an outbreak really developing in South Africa and the likes of Brandon Grace and Ernie Els can't turn up, or even an Emiliano Grillo out of Argentina, that when golf starts, it should be available to everybody.
Exactly. And I think, if certain players can't get to the event because of where they live or where they're from, that's probably a bit unfair. So we just have to wait and see what happens. Look, hopefully, like, August is a long way away. It is a long way away. So, I think if everybody does what they should be doing over the next couple of months, we should be able to get to a place where by the end of the summer we're all playing sport, and that would be a great place to be.
Oh, and if that sort of schedule does work out, how exciting will it be for the autumn into the winter with so much golf? And squeezed in there in the middle of it is a Ryder Cup, potentially a week after a US Open. Have you spoken to Harrington about potentially what might happen? And I'm sure you have thought about, is this something that could be beneficial if it ends up in 12 picks, or if it's a shortened qualification window? Or, again, might it just be something that you're going to have to accept these are strange, unusual, difficult circumstances, and that, unfortunately, it might just be bad timing?
Yeah, obviously. I tend, myself and Pori don't really talk about it too much. I've been on the text a little bit to him, but not a whole lot. I'm not talking about the Ryder Cup. Just slagging him off about his home videos. But
have you been watching them?
I watched them, yeah. I try not to listen to him, but I watched them.
that's a good... I'm worried that that's a good insight into what his Ryder Cup captaincy is going to be. Little exhibitions on the range every evening.
Yeah. Look, you said to yourself, I think it's just strange times for everyone. And I think, look, I think if the Ryder Cup does go ahead, it'll be great. Obviously, I hope I'm there. Who knows what way the team's going to be picked, whether it be 12 picks or whether it be qualifying process or something like that. But, you know, either way, I would love to see it going ahead. I know the Ryder Cup is incredibly big for the European Tour. So I think maybe if it doesn't happen, the European Tour might be not be in trouble. But
funnily enough, you mentioned that Paul McGinley was on with us on Golf Weekly last week, and my understanding was the exact same. But he was of the, and obviously he's on the European Tour board, that because it's in America, actually it's not anywhere near as beneficial to the European Tour. So actually they're a bit more relaxed.
Okay, maybe not than the rest of us thought. Look, he obviously knows more than me, but like I just look for personally, I'd love to see it go ahead, and obviously I'd love to be there. So, but we're like, it's just a waiting game. We're gonna have to wait and see, and hopefully golf starts back where I have enough time to make the team if I need to, you know. And if it's 12 picks, well then hopefully I get a phone call.
Well, he can't leave out a 2-year Open champion, can he?
No comment.
Just make a duplicate of the claret jug and you'll have exactly the same kitchen table as he has.
There's
probably something then looking forward, because I know a big goal and big aim for you was getting on the Ryder Cup team, because you've had to have a good season. You've had to have backed up what you achieved in 2019 to get on that Ryder Cup team, and getting there means that it's been a successful 12 months. If the Ryder Cup and all that changes, like, do you expect when golf is definitely coming back, you sit down with the team again and you're going to have to rethink what 2020 is completely?
Yeah. I suppose I haven't really thought about that, to be honest. I think when we do get a definite start date, obviously those conversations will happen, and, you know, you've set out some goals. But I think, you know, there's going to be, when golf does start back, it's going to be weird, because I think a lot more players will be just happy to be back playing golf. And, you know, I think some people might struggle because you can't practice. You know, maybe some people might go 2 or 3 months without hitting a shot because they just can't practice. So it'd be just interesting times and weird times. And but yeah, when it does start back and when we do get a definite date, I'll just have to sit down and trying to refocus myself on what I need to do for the rest of the season, I suppose.
Is stagnation a worry? You've no control over this at all, and there's very few people, maybe Potter Carrington in his back garden, and he'll re-emerge as a world force off the back of this with the amount of practice he's putting in. An awful lot of golfers, as you say, probably aren't going to pick up a golf club for 2-3 months. Again, is that just something you've got to accept and hope for the best that things come back as they were?
Yeah, I think you just have to accept that and take it on the chin. Look, at the end of the day, like, it's not, you know, there's people in worse situations than you are, you know, not being able to hit a golf ball or whatever. But I'm generally okay after taking a long break. But we just have to wait and see. And look, hopefully when I do get home, or if I do get home in the next few months, that the golf course will be back open and I'll be able to get back out and hit a few shots.
I was watching back the highlights of Portrush last night, and well, one thing that struck me, have you watched it back? Like, have you sat down and watched all of Sunday or Saturday?
Once or twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Is Wendy like, just turn it off? We've seen it. No. We know what happens. You were great. Well done.
There's a great, there's about 15 minutes on YouTube of every shot on Saturday and every shot on Sunday, and I've watched the two of them, and they're pretty cool. And I have watched Thursday. The one thing I don't remember much of Thursday and Friday, like, so I've watched that back a couple of times. Yeah, it's pretty cool to be able to go back and watch stuff like that.
Yeah, still watching it back, you get goosebumps, particularly even on the Saturday, I thought, with the 63 and that spell around 15 16 17. At the time, every message was, this is insane. Like, this is just otherworldly. Like, when you watch back, can you believe it happened? Or were you in a zone at that stage that it felt like it was almost happening to somebody else? Or were you very much in control of your emotions?
Yeah, I think I was in, like, I said at the time, I was definitely in the best place mentally I've ever been. And, like, even just a few things happened that day that I was like, when I sit and look back on it, like, you know, I've said it before, but when I got to 17, I hit my tee shot, and I was, so I would have been three ahead at the time, and I hit my tee shot, and the crowds were just going mental. Like, I hit a tee shot, and I was walking down the fairway, and I kind of pulled ball back a little bit, and I said, you could sort of, you see down the hill on 17, you can see the 18th, you know, it was full, and people were just going wild, and I said to Bo, let's just enjoy this next 20 minutes, because who knows when this will ever happen again. So that's kind of how mentally focused I was. And, you know, I just knew, I was very aware of what was going on. And I went down, then I got that up and down for birdie on 17. And then I just missed on the last. But it was incredible scenes when I look back on the Saturday, especially, like the,
yeah,
you know, the Saturday evening was just, it was incredible. It was, yeah, not that it's hard to believe, obviously. But you do look back and go, wow, like, I was very, very, very lucky to be able to do something like that.
I guess because of the occasion, maybe it has to be, but, like, is the Saturday the best round of golf you've ever played?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it was, yeah, it definitely was. It was one of those where, you know, everything went well, but I played some great golf. And I think Sunday's round, you know, people don't really, even though it was one over, I think Sunday's round was as good as round as I played as well. You know, it was probably playing about four or five shots harder than Saturday and the golf course. And, you know, I managed to, I think out of the top 20 players, I was one of the best scores. So yeah, it was kind of, you know, it was one of those days where Saturday's round was amazing, but Sunday's round was pretty good as well.
And like the conditions, for people who weren't there, maybe I don't know if it fully came across on the television, just how shockingly bad it got for probably the space of an hour. I remember Graham McDowell had just finished his round and he was in the press tent and it felt like the roof was about to come off it. The rain was sideways. And the fear is that there's an element of luck, there's an element of lottery comes into it when it's that bad that the ball just comes off the club face the wrong way. And in conditions like that, you can drop two or three shots in a rush. Was that fear there at any stage that there's only a certain amount, as much as well as I'm playing and Tommy Fleetwood, yeah, things aren't exactly going well, that there's an element of good fortune that I need here?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we got to like 7-8 and the weather started to get really bad. I three put at 8 and then I stand up on 9-tee and it was horrendous, like as bad as weather as, you know, I don't normally ever play in my wet jacket. Like, I normally wouldn't play in it, but I had no choice. It was raining so heavy. And the ninth hole was, like, into the wind, and the rain was into as well. And it was one of those tee shots where if you hit driver, if you hit it left, you could lose a ball. You know, there wasn't any crowds over there, which was, you know, would have been a bit of a disaster hitting it over there. So I just hit the ball. I said, I'm just going to hit three iron down, try and poke a three iron down the fairway here, because if I just hit it, squeeze the three iron low, it can't do much wrong. Like, and I squeezed a bit right into the rough and I had to lay up, but I made a bogey and I knew sort of if I make bogeys, I can get away with that. Like, I can deal with that. And because everybody was making bogeys. Like, I had a look at the leaderboard after 9 holes and I seen everybody was making bogeys and shooting high numbers. So I was pretty comfortable with what I was doing. And then when I got to a 2-horse race with Tommy, I was just so focused on just staying ahead of him. But I've said it like all along, I think I was so mentally in a great place that week and focused on the job at hand that, you know, it would have taken a lot for me to lose that day. I was really, you know, going out there to fight to the very end, I suppose.
You like looking at leaderboards generally?
I do all the time. Like, I think anybody who says they don't look at leaderboards is a liar. They're so big and they're just there that it's hard not to look at them. So yeah, I'm a leaderboard watcher all the time. Yeah.
The moving past the Open then in the last few months, and I know in your press conference afterwards, like it's always similar questions, and you can enjoy your one major for, you know, 20 minutes and then it's, well, how many more are you going to go on and win?
Yeah.
And he said, like, let me enjoy this one, which is the perfectly natural response. But then it's weeks and months later, and I'm sure there's many sports psychologists who'd like to charge you a lot of money to sit down and figure out that way of getting the balance of enjoying that success, of knowing that you got to the top of the mountain, but also staying motivated. Like, how have you gone through that process to make sure, like, what you've done is unbelievable. 99.9% of people will never achieve, I'd imagine, a high, and you never want to forget about that. But you're still only, what, you just turned 33, still have another 20 20, 30 years of good golf ahead of you to make sure that you're, I guess, just don't like rest on your laurels isn't the right term, but have you done a lot of work on that, or are you just taking things naturally?
I think I'm just taking things naturally. Like I said, you know, the way I went about my business last year was we sat down last Christmas, so Christmas 2018 before the 2019 season set, and we talked a lot about it and what way I was going to try and do things, and you know, and then the majority of my time, I try to just live it day by day. I try to go out and shoot the best score I can on the day, you know, I'm out there. So no matter whether it be the first round or the final round, I just try and go out and shoot the best score I can. And if it's 65, it's 65. If it's 75, you've got to take that on the chin as well. And, you know, if you need to go practice. But it's kind of, I've gone away from trying to force things. I've gone away from trying to, I'm not saying that I haven't over the last few months. I'm not saying that I haven't kind of got in my own way the odd time where, you know, say at the end of last season, I really wanted to win that race Dubai, and I probably wanted it a bit too much, and I put a bit too much pressure on myself. So, you know, I ended up, I think, I don't know, I finished fourth or fifth. So that wasn't ideal. But, you know, there is a part of you that wants to say, I don't want to live off the open. Like, I don't want to live off doing that. But I've been saying that my whole career. Like, I said at the start, I don't want to live off winning the Irish Open as an amateur, you know, and then took me a few years, I won again, you know, and then you want to win again. And I think no matter what you do as a sports person, or, you know, no matter what you do, you want to do something better, or you want to do something else. So I've sort of set out my goals for this year. Obviously, I'm not getting to go out and try and achieve them on a daily basis now, but I still get up every morning and I still just try and be the best version of me that I can be. Like, and that's all I can do for now. And I suppose I'm just talking about living in the moment. Like, I just really want to live in the moment. Obviously, I look back on last year with, you know, the fondest memories that I'll ever have. Like, it's kind of, I feel very privileged that I got to achieve something like that. And now it's up to me to kind of kick on and try and be the best version I can be for the next 10 or 15 years, or how long my professional career lasts. But one thing's for certain is if I finish at the end and don't win another major, I'm not going to think it's a bad career. But that doesn't mean I'm not driven to win another one. I know how hard they are to win, and I know, like, how many chances you get. Like, I've played for the last 10 years and I've only got two chances to win one. So, you know, I'm lucky enough that I've taken one, and, you know, hopefully in the next 10 years, I get another couple of chances as well.
That pressure you spoke about there, maybe at the race to Dubai, and like, human nature is there are going to be periods over the next few years where you'll put pressure on yourself again and get down on yourself at times. Like, yeah. How does that manifest itself over a tournament week? Is it like, are you more aggressive on the golf course? Are you taking more risks than you should? Are you just generally a different attitude? Like, would people know the difference between Shane Lowry when he's putting real pressure on himself and when he's not?
Yeah, I think me personally, when I'm putting pressure on myself, I go a little bit into myself too much. I don't allow myself to express myself on the golf course. I don't allow myself to hit the shots. So I'm not as aggressive as I would like to be. You know, so I'm kind of just almost playing golf, trying not to hit bad shots as opposed to trying to hit good shots. You know, and that's kind of when I start to struggle, that's what happens to me. But when I'm in a good place mentally, I allow myself hit the shots. I allow myself make mistakes. You know, I'm going to hit bad shots. I'm going to make bogeys. I'm going to make mistakes. But it's allowing yourself to do that and being able to move on after it and hit good shots after that as well.
The fond memories of last year and the celebrations, like so much of last year was probably a very public celebration from getting back into Dublin and the videos that everyone's seen down in 37, and then like the ridiculous scenes down in Clara going back home and something I don't think anyone could probably ever have dreamed of. Are there other standout things that are more private things, people who've gotten in touch with us that really stand out, things you could never expect from being a major champion that really meant a lot to you?
I suppose for me, like personally, probably the most special thing last year was going home to Clara. Like, that was kind of, I didn't cry. I think I had a bit of a sob on the 18th green during my speech, but I remember when I pulled into Clara in the bus, that's the first time that I really was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, so that was probably one of the most special things. But just being able to, like, we went out for dinner on the Wednesday night with all my team set. There was about, with their wives and girlfriends, and there was probably about 20 of us all together. And, like, that was being able to sit there and just talk about things and share things with people that, who have been there through, like, the really, really, the tougher times. And, yeah, you get to share something like that with them. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I guess that's the, as All-Ireland winning footballers talk about, shutting the door in the dressing room.
Yeah, exactly. And another special thing I just come to my mind was Croke Park on a Saturday after. So that was pretty cool. Like, being who I am, where I'm from, and how I grew up, and driving into Croke Park, into the, under the stadium with all my friends from home, from Clara, and being able to live something like that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm sure when everything gets back to normal, there'll be probably a few more celebrations. There'll be anniversaries and there'll be all that. And hopefully in time, you'll get to relive all those celebrations again. You've been very good with your time. How have you been filling your days then? Like, what are you doing to relax? What are you watching? What are you reading?
Like, Iris is three, so I'm filling my days running around after her. myself and Wendy take turns going to the gym. We go out for a walk. Yeah, just pass the time, try and cook the odd meal myself. And then we've just started, we're on season two of The Sopranos at the minute.
So good thinking.
Yeah, I've never seen that, and it's obviously quite a long, it's long. So that should keep us going for the next few weeks anyway. And yeah, just trying to stay, I think stay mentally healthy, I suppose, more than anything else. And yeah, get through all this. And, you know, when we're back playing sport and when we're back doing living our day-to-day lives, I think we'll all be stronger and better people for all of this.
Yeah, I think some good words to finish on, Shane. Very best of luck to yourself and Wendy and Iris over the next few weeks, and hopefully it is just a few weeks before you can get back home and everyone can see each other all over again. You've been with us with thanks to Bank of Ireland, who are there to support their customers through the impact of coronavirus. Check out bankofireland.com for more information. Shane, great stuff. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Nathan. Cheers.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.